This is Audible.
Defiance Audio presents Simon R. Green's Deathstalker War. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, and Terrence Aselford. Episode 4, To Be a Deathstalker. It was another perfect day in paradise. On the planet Viramond, great green fields stretched lazily under a vast blue sky, marked here and there by low stone walls, spiky hedge boundaries, and ancient beaten paths. Beyond the fields lay dark sprawling woodlands with tall trees and drooping foliage, cool, calm refuges from the heat of the summer sun. A marvelous, open, peaceful world of bounty and tranquility. And David Deathstalker owned it all. The Deathstalker and his friend, Kid Summerisle, called by some Kid Death, raced their modified flyers in and out of the trees, sweeping this way and that at breathtaking speed, and whooping wildly as they went. The flyers were really little more than gravity sleds, a board to stand on and a vertical yoke for the controls, stripped down to the bare essentials for extra speed and better maneuvering. David and Kit had shut the force shields down so they could feel the wind buffeting their faces and driving tears from their narrowed eyes. If something were to go wrong, if they misjudged speed or distance or reflexes and ended up crashing or colliding with some unyielding object without the force shield's protection, they would be instantly killed, but neither of them gave this a thought. They were young and fit and rich, with warriors' lightning reflexes and instincts, and therefore they were immortal. Accidents were things that happened to other people. And so they went, whipping in and out of the trees, slamming through the gloom of the forest so fast it was nothing but a blur of browns and greens around them. The Deathstalker and the Summer Isle, firm friends and heads of their respective clans, young and daring and still searching for some definition of who they really were. David, tall and handsome and always immaculately dressed. Dark of hair and eye and wild of heart. A warrior as yet untested in war. A fairly minor cousin of an ancient family until Owen's outlawing made him suddenly head of the clan and lord of Viramond. An occasional secret supporter of the rebellion, mostly just for the fun of intrigue. And Kit, Kid Death, the smiling killer, a slender figure in black and silver, pale and more than fashionably thin, with icy blue eyes and pale blonde flyaway hair, who became head of his family by killing his father, his mother, and all his brothers and sisters in a series of more or less legal duels. Kit Summerisle, sometime favorite of the Empress Lionstone, sometime supporter of the Underground, a dangerous and isolated man who went where the killing was. Until he met David Deathstalker. After a while, the adrenaline pounding through their systems began to make them feel giddy in the head, so they called the race a draw and burst up out of the forest canopy, emerging into the clear blue skies above. They eased back on their speed till they were just coasting along and leaned heavily on their control yokes, grinning till their cheeks ached as they waited for their breathing to settle. David was glad to see Kit smiling. The Summer Isle was a somber man by nature, usually only enjoying himself in the heat of battle. But away from the pressures of court and politics and in the company of a good friend, the notorious killer was finally blooming into an amiable, personable young man. Here on Viramond, David and Kit could be just two more aristos, secure in power and position, idling away the days as it pleased them. They drifted with the wind, letting it take them where it would. David looked down at the world moving beneath him and found it good. The stock stretched away in all directions, cared for by peasants who had done so for countless generations. They knew what they were doing. They didn't need any help or advice from their most recent lord any more than the animals did. They both knew their place and purpose in the Empire. Elsewhere, other peasants were harvesting crops, tending to the land, preparing the landing pads at the only starport for the next ships to arrive. The transports brought in supplies for the people and carried away crops.
And I'm going to, because I fucking hate you.
Flying poor and rich alike, with the staples of diet and the occasional luxury. 9/10 of the planet was given over to food production of one kind or another, and the people who lived there would have it no other way. Miramont might not have the upsets and excitements and glittering cities of other richer planets, but still, it was a calm and peaceful world, where man could know purpose, the comforts of tradition, and joy of service to humanity. They also made the Lord of Viramont very, very rich. People might argue over territory and war over politics, but both sides still needed to eat, and Viramont served all impartially. David Deathstalker looked down on his world and was content. More money than he could spend in a lifetime. Though that wouldn't stop him trying. Kit moved in close behind him, playfully bumping the side of his flyer against David's, so that they both wobbled dangerously for a moment.
You got that look on your face again, Deathstalker. That Lord of All I Survey look. Soon you'll be busy all day reading reports and worrying over crop yields and export tariffs, with no time for the likes of me. A man old before his time.
Never. I employ other people to worry about such things for me. People like the steward, bless his Doran dutiful heart. The man's about as much fun as a hailstorm in July, and he gets on my nerves something fierce, but he knows his job. And as long as he does, I don't have to. I just sign everything he puts in front of me, read every 10th one just to keep him honest, and leave it all to him. No, Kit, this place is one big cash cow, making me richer with every day that passes. And all I have to do is sit back and let it happen.
But what use are riches if you've nothing to spend them on? The few big cities they've got here aren't exactly dens of iniquity and vice, are they? Their idea of excitement is cheating in the horse trials. Just what are you planning to do with all these fields and forests?
Enjoy them. Come on, Kit. We tried practically every amusement you could find on Golgotha, and none of them interested us more than a few weeks at a time. We've gambled in illegal casinos with our lives wagered on the throw of a die, fought in the arenas against all comers, screwed our way through the houses of joy till our backs gave out, and still we ended up bored as often as not. That's how we got involved in the rebellion. Nah, we need time off, Kit. I like it here. Nothing to do but eat and drink and grow fat. Booze away the evenings and frolic with lusty peasant girls. Play catch-as-catch-can on flyers for a bit of excitement. I'm having a good time, aren't you?
Yes. Somewhat to my surprise, I am. And I haven't killed anyone for weeks. Amazing. Mind you, we were supposed to act here as agents for the underground, and we haven't sent in a report since we got here. Do you think we should?
Certainly not. That comes under the heading of work. A pox on the underground and Lionstone both. Here we are safe from all factions and their impertinent demands. Whatever happens in the rebellion, no one's going to touch Viramont. Whoever wins, they'll still need to eat. Though it must be said, I quite like being a rebel, with secret meetings, hidden agendas, and special passwords. Enough of seriousness. I think we've earned the right to be entirely frivolous for a while. Nothing to do, no demands, no duties. Like being a kid again.
I wouldn't know. I never had a childhood. I was raised to be a fighter and a warrior practically from the moment I could walk. I had dueling partners instead of friends. I had to be as good a swordsman as my famous father and illustrious grandfather, whether I wanted to or not. As it turned out, I was better than either of them. And weren't they surprised when I proved it by killing them both? I enjoyed that. Making them suffer as they'd made me suffer all my life. I was never allowed a childhood. Only the endless training and discipline to shape me for a destiny I never wanted.
You're starting to sound like my cousin Owen.
David kept his voice carefully light. Kit had never opened up so much to him before, and he didn't want to discourage Kit by letting him see how much he was moved.
To hell with Lionstone and the Underground. It's party time! We can be ourselves! No Deathstalker in Summer Isle, no scions of an ancient line, no boosted man or Kid Death. Just two friends, free at last. And we don't ever have to leave here. Do you really miss anything from Golgotha?
I still kind of miss the arenas. The roar of the crowd, the smell of fresh blood on the sands, the clash of steel on steel, and the joy in your heart as an enemy dies at your hand. The sheer seductiveness of testing your skill in the only way that really matters, when your very life is on the line. And I never did get a chance to face the masked gladiator.
File it under unfinished business.
I could have beaten him.
Yeah, you probably could.
David hoped he'd let the matter drop. He'd never admitted it to Kit, but David had been glad to leave the arenas. He hadn't liked what they were doing to him. Out on the bloody sands, before a roaring crowd, he'd discovered in himself a dark joy and satisfaction in the act of slaughter that disturbed him greatly. It didn't fit in with the image he'd always had of himself, and it frightened him. He didn't want to become another Kid Death. So he ran away to Viramond, first chance he got, to try being another kind of man, steeped in peace and the quieter pleasures. And maybe Kit could find a kind of peace here too, away from the dark needs that drove him.
Thank you for bringing me here, for being my friend. I never had a friend before you, David. I was never really alive until you taught me how to live.
David reached out and clapped a hand on Kit's shoulder, squeezing it reassuringly.
It's too bright a day for such dark thoughts. Forget the past, Kit. Come on, race you back to the standing. Loser buys drinks for everyone tonight.
You're on!
Kit gunned his engine. His flyer plunged forward, rapidly gaining speed. David roared with mock rage and sped off after him. Together, they disappeared into the distance, their laughter sounding clear and happy and untroubled on the quiet summer day. They parked their flyers in the caves under the Deathstalker standing and made their way up through the great old house, arguing amiably about who'd won the race. David looked around approvingly as they strode through the wide stone corridors on their way to the great dining hall. The standing had been in the Deathstalker family for generations, on various planets. Owen had had the vast building transferred to Viramond, brick by brick, and reassembled there when he bought the planet's lordship. It was family tradition that each new head of the clan chose a new world for his or her standing, but David couldn't be bothered. Viramond suited him just fine, and it pleased him to rebel against family tradition, even if only in such a small way. He didn't want to be just another Deathstalker. David had spent a lot of time and effort in removing all traces of Owen's presence from the standing. He was Lord now, and he didn't want anyone being reminded of his predecessor. So he had all of Owen's remaining belongings thrown out or burned, and did his best to fill the many rooms and halls with his own belongings. If truth be told, his own things looked rather small and out of place in the great old house, crowded as it was with treasures and trophies from generations of Deathstalkers. In the end, all that mattered to David was that the standing and the world were his now, and by the time he'd finished, no one would remember that there had ever been any other lord. They'd almost reached the dining hall when the steward intercepted them. David took one look at the thick sheaf of papers in the steward's hand and groaned loudly. He hated paperwork and made sure the steward knew it. But still he insisted on dealing with the really important business himself. The steward could deal with day-to-day things, but David didn't want the man making decisions that were the rightful province of the Lord of Viramond. The steward was a gray man, tall, stick-thin, and gray-haired. He wore gray clothes and presented a gray, passionless face to the world. His voice was a respectful murmur, his eyes were always respectfully downcast, but David could never quite escape the feeling that the man was silently mocking him. David detested the man, but tried to keep it to himself. He knew he couldn't run the standing without him.
Oh, more papers. Can't they wait till after dinner?
That's what you said at breakfast, my lord. I must respectfully insist that...
All right, all right. There's an office just off this corridor, isn't there? We can do it there. Kit, you stay with me. If I have to suffer, everyone suffers.
Wouldn't miss it for the world.
David sat behind the desk in the poky little study and worked his way doggedly through the paperwork. He took a spiteful pleasure in making his signature as indecipherable as possible. Strictly speaking, he should have sealed each paper with wax and stamped it with his family ring and crest, but Owen still had the ring. David had ordered a new family ring made for him, but had yet to make up his mind on the final design. By the end, he was just skimming through the papers to make sure he wasn't signing his own death warrant. David signed the last page with a flourish and sat back in his chair with a theatrical sigh. He studied the steward glumly as the man shuffled the papers together. The steward reminded him of his many tutors, every one of whom had reminded him at every opportunity of his intellectual cousin, Owen. the famed, if minor, historian. Owen was constantly held up as an example of everything David wasn't, and knew he never could be. No surprise, then, that David had despised his elder cousin before they ever met. They weren't close, even by blood. Owen's father, Arthur, had a younger brother, Saul. Saul married Louise, whose sister Margaret was David's mother. Under normal circumstances, David would have stood no chance at all of ever succeeding to the family title, but the tainted inheritance of the Boost killed a great many Death Stalkers before they ever reached maturity. So when Owen was outlawed, David found himself suddenly in possession of a title and responsibilities he'd never expected or really wanted. Especially if all he ever got to do as Death Stalker was sign bloody papers.
This is the last of the documents, my lord. But there is still business which requires your attention.
What do you mean? More business? I've signed everything that doesn't move. Whatever's left can wait until after I've eaten, digested, and had a little nap.
I'm afraid not, my lord. There has been a communication from the Empress herself concerning her plans for the future of Viramond.
David looked sharply at the steward. This was the first time he'd heard of any plans for Viramond's future, especially from the Empress. He hadn't thought Lionstone even knew where Viramond was. And as lord of the planet and its people, he should have been contacted well in advance of any plans.
All right, steward, put it on the main screen. Let's see what the iron bitch has to say for herself.
The steward nodded serenely and moved over to activate the viewscreen controls. The screen lit up on the wall before David and Kit, and the nightmare began. Lionstone provided the voiceover, but the images on the screen were clear enough on their own. Viramond was to become a completely automated world, one huge factory from pole to pole. The towns and the villages and the great fields would vanish under miles-long sheds, with the livestock contained in pens stacked hundreds high. Animals would be born in the cloning bays, live short, artificially fattened lives, and die in the attached slaughterhouses, without ever once seeing the outside world. No more need for farms or farmers. The computers would run everything. The peasants would be rounded up, transported to other worlds, and put to work in factories. The projected meat production would rise thousandsfold in the first year alone, and would pay for itself in 10 years or less. And that was Lionstone's plan for Viramond, a future with no place in it for human hands. The final scene on the view screen was a computer simulation of what the new world would look like. A landscape of endless sheds and factories, with thick black smoke belching up from the slaughterhouse incinerators, as bones and hooves and other non-essentials were melted down to make glue. Nothing would be wasted in the automated world. The screen went blank as the message ended, and the steward coughed politely to remind them he was still there.
Any questions, my lord?
Is she out of her tiny mind? Does she really think I'll stand for this? You can't just destroy an entire world and its culture. The people here have traditions of service that go back centuries.
You should be proud, my lord. Viramond is to be the first such planet, the prototype. Once its worth has been proved here, all other food-producing worlds will be transformed accordingly. Your present wealth will be greatly magnified.
Who cares about that?
David stuck his face right into the steward's.
Where's the fun in ruling over one big factory? No, this obscenity will never happen here. Not as long as I'm lord.
What can you do to stop it? I mean, she's the Empress. She makes the decisions. You argue about it too much, and she might declare you a traitor, just like Owen.
She wouldn't really destroy a whole planet, would she?
Almost certainly. It wasn't that long ago she outlawed the planet Tanim and had the whole planet scorched, remember?
David scowled. He remembered. Billions of people had died. A civilization gone up in flames at the Empress's command.
That was over politics. This is business. I know where this is coming from, why she chose to start with my world. It's because I'm a Death Stalker and Owen's had such a triumph on Mistworld. She can't get at him, so she takes it out on me, the childish bitch. I'm not going to let her get away with this.
As I understand it, the transformation of food planets is part of a process to ensure an uninterrupted flow of food for the Empire during the projected future war with the aliens. As such, this becomes a matter of security, and is therefore not open to question. by anyone. There is nothing you can do, my lord. Nothing at all.
I could talk to the Company of Lords and Parliament if need be. I'm not the only one with a personal stake in this. No other lord will stand for this happening to one of their planets. Where's the fun in being a lord without people to lord us over? This new efficiency would leave us nothing more than factory managers. Tradespeople! Get out of my sight, steward! I'm sick of looking at you!
The steward bowed and left. David leaned back against the wall, breathing heavily. Kit looked at him thoughtfully.
Can we stop her? What can we do if she makes this a matter of security?
We have to stop her, Kit. These plans would undermine every lord's position. She's trying to take away our power in return for more money. This is a blow against the fundamental rights and powers of all lords. With our planets controlled by computers and our peasants scattered in factories on a dozen worlds, we'd have no real power base at all. If she gets away with this, Limestone could break the power of the lords once and for all.
Let's go to dinner. The world always looks better after a good meal.
To hell with dinner. I need a drink. Lots of drinks. Let's go to the tavern in town and see Alice and Jenny.
Sounds good to me.
High in orbit above Viramond, and unbeknownst to most of those below, was the Imperial Star Cruiser Elegance. Her master, General Shaw Beckett, sat unhappily in his private quarters, drumming the fingers of one hand upon the armrest of his chair. If truth be told, he had no appetite for his present mission, but the Empress's orders had been clear and quite specific, and as a good soldier, he would do as he was told. It wasn't the first time he'd followed orders he'd had no taste for, and he doubted it would be the last. Life was like that more often than not, under the reign of Lionstone 14, the Iron Bitch. Beckett was a large man and extremely fat, and his chair groaned slightly under him with every impatient movement. All of his invited guests were late, but there was nothing he could do to hurry them. Too much concern might appear as weakness, and this would be a bad group to appear weak in front of. He thought about this to keep from thinking about other things. There was a great deal in the near future that he preferred not to think about until he had to. The door chimed politely, announcing his first visitor. Beckett growled,
"Andra,"
and the door slid open to reveal Lord Valentine Wolfe in all his morbid glory. He was dressed in exquisitely cut clothes of eye-blinding white, topped by a long black cloak with a scarlet interior. His long, thin face was white as bone, save for the heavily mascaraed eyes and his wide, crimson smile. A mane of jet-black hair fell to his shoulders, with heavily oiled and scented ringlets. He carried a long-stemmed rose in one hand, its petals a deep purple, almost fleshy. The stem had vicious thorns that made Beckett wince just to look at them. Valentine stood posed in the doorway a moment, so Beckett could appreciate the spectacle, and then he drifted casually forward into Beckett's quarters. The door slid shut behind him, and Beckett felt a brief but very real twinge of unquiet, as though he was now trapped in a room with a deadly predator. In a very real sense, he was. Valentine looked unhurriedly about him, taking in the various points of interest with his dark-lined eyes, and then dismissed them all with the twitch of one painted eyebrow. The wolf stopped before Beckett and bowed formally. Beckett nodded curtly in return, but didn't bother to get up. It took a lot of effort to heave all his bulk up out of a chair, and he was damned if Valentine Wolfe was worth it. He gestured at an empty chair with one fat hand, and Valentine sank languorously into it.
"Greetings and salutations, dear General. You've done amazing things with your quarters. I don't like them, but then my tastes aren't often appreciated by others."
"Possibly, because you're a drug-soaked degenerate who's so far gone you have to flip a coin to decide which way up you are."
"Possibly. Can I interest you in a little something, General?"
"You cannot. I have no interest in clouding my mind with chemicals when there's work to be done."
"Ah, such a narrow attitude."
Valentine delicately sniffed his rose and briefly worried a petal with his teeth.
"I've often found that the right substances in the proper proportions and combinations can be a positive boon to a man's thoughts, leading to greater clarity and comprehension. I am entirely at your service, and just dying to hear all about our mission here."
Beckett would not allow himself to be baited.
You'll have to wait for the others to arrive. The Empress's instructions were quite clear.
And God bless the Empress.
Valentine swung one long, white-clad leg over the other. Beckett had to admire the wolf's calm, even if it did probably have its origins in a pill bottle. Ever since the debacle on Technos 3 and the total destruction of his new star drive factory, Valentine Wolf's fortunes had taken a severe blow. Where once he had been head of the foremost family in the Empire, Clan Wolf, with an automatic place at the Empress's side, he was now barely tolerated at court, and then mostly for amusement value. Production of the new star drive had been given over to Clan Chojiro, who were having to start again from scratch. This did not please Lionstone, who wanted the new drive installed in the Imperial fleet yesterday, if not sooner. The two wolves responsible for the Technos 3 fiasco, Daniel and Stephanie, had disappeared, leaving Valentine to shoulder the blame, which he did with a shrug and a charming smile. He made good all the financial losses out of his own pocket, publicly disowned his missing brother and sister, and fought back with a trump card few had known he had. Valentine, it turned out, had access to a secret source of extremely advanced high tech, and that had bought him his place here today and a chance at redemption in Lionstone's eyes. The door chimed again and opened at Beckett's command to reveal the Lord High Dram, warrior prime to the Empire, and official consort to Lionstone herself, also known, as far behind his back as possible, as the Widowmaker. Tall and sleekly muscled, clad in his usual black robes and battle armor, Dram bowed to General Beckett and nodded curtly to Valentine. Beckett bowed in return. The wolf waggled his long white fingers in a friendly way. Dram pretended he hadn't seen that, sank comfortably into the chair farthest from the wolf, and stretched out his long legs before him. He was handsome in an unspectacular way, but his dark eyes and constant slight smile were utterly cold. Like Valentine, Dram had kept pretty much to himself on the trip out, staying in his cabin and speaking only to his own people. Beckett curled a lip mentally. Presumably, the Lord High Dram felt himself too grand to socialize with the lower orders. Not that Beckett was complaining. The last thing he needed was the Empress's consort peering over his shoulder and making notes.
How long before operations begin, General? I've been informed my people are fully prepared and equipped and ready for action.
Soon, my Lord Dram. This will be your final briefing. We merely await the arrival of the last few principals. And hopefully this will be they. Enter!
The door slid open, and Captain John Silence, Investigator Frost, and Security Officer V. Stelmach filed in. The Wolf and the Warrior Prime both sat up a little straighter in their seats. These three officers from the ship Dauntless were familiar to anyone in the Empire who owned a holoscreen. Their checkered career had had more ups and downs than a bride's nightie. They'd gone from heroes to outcasts and back again so fast that some people watching had been known to suffer from whiplash. Their current status was somewhat uncertain. On the one hand, they had failed in their mission to capture that most notable traitor and outlaw Owen Deathstalker, and had been sent home defeated by his rebel allies. But on the other hand, they had quite definitely single-handedly saved the homeworld Golgotha from attack by a mysterious and powerful alien ship. When last heard of, the Dauntless had been touring planets on the Outer Rim, essentially on punishment duty until the Empress decided to forgive their sins. And now, here they were on the Elegance, far from their infamous ship. Beckett, Valentine, and Dram bowed courteously to them and studied them openly. You didn't get to see legends in the flesh that often.